This is The Guardian.
Today, the story of why Denmark's former spy chief and its former defence minister are now facing the trials of their lives.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It was the 8th of December, and I came back from the country in the Balkans. Then I landed early morning in Copenhagen Airport.
In December 2021, Lars Findsen was the head of Denmark's Foreign Intelligence Agency. He was on leave at the time, had been overseas for a few days, and boarded a flight home to Copenhagen Airport. And it's there, in the arrivals hall, that armed police quietly approach him and tell him he's under arrest on suspicion of treason.
When I was about to leave the transit area, I was approached by a man, and it was still there with Corona, so people were wearing masks, so he was a bit disguised with the mask, but I could see that I knew him. I could see it at his eyes, and he asked me whether I would follow him, and then I got arrested.
In custody, Findsen learns authorities have been looking into him for some time. At some point, a specialist team of spies has secretly entered his house, wired it with microphones. As part of the operation, they've broken in several times, taking notes of what they're seeing. Leafing through the evidence with his lawyer, Findsen realises, for months, maybe longer, everything said out loud in his house has been recorded.
Yeah, I was seeing all sort of conversations with my children. You know, I was revisiting, actually, what had happened the last more than a year of my life.
His car, his holiday house, he realises there have been bugs everywhere.
That also left uncertainty in my children, because they were asking, can I be myself in my room? Can I be sure that there aren't any bugs here? When I am still, to some extent, driving with my youngest daughter, she is very fast to ask me, Dad, are we being followed?
Findsen had been responsible for Denmark's biggest intelligence agency. His work had been state secrets. And now he's in front of a judge in secret legal proceedings.
And the next morning I was presented in front of a judge who I think was a bit rattled by the situation. There were police all over. They were armed and carrying around, you know, steel boxes. Very, very dramatic.
As he waits for the prosecutor's next move, he's thrown in jail next to prisoners accused of all sorts of crimes.
They were there for drugs, for arms dealing, kidnapping and stuff like that.
You mean there were no other spy chiefs in custody?
There were no other spy chiefs. There were certainly no other, you know, senior civil servants my age.
The prosecution of Lars Findsen is part of an explosive intelligence scandal that has rocked Denmark. It isn't just him on trial facing serious criminal charges. Denmark's former defence minister, a guy who used to sit across from world leaders like Angela Merkel and Donald Trump, is also in the dock, accused of treason. It's a story of whistleblowers, of spies turning on each other, of state secrets being spilled on the front page of newspapers and on the TV news. And actually, it begins with The Guardian and the decision a decade ago by an American intelligence contractor named Edward Snowden to reveal some of America's deepest secrets to the world. And Harry Davies, an investigative reporter with The Guardian, and Lucy Hoff, a Today in Focus producer, have spent the past few months getting to the bottom of it. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, Denmark's biggest spy scandal. This story begins in a place known in Denmark's intelligence community as the Farm. Not entirely a metaphorical name. And a few months ago, Harry and Lucy went to see it.
We asked a taxi driver to drive us to this spot on Amager, which is the island immediately south of Copenhagen, and he didn't really understand why we wanted to go there and was a bit dubious, suspicious of why we're heading in that direction. But eventually, in the middle of nowhere, we just asked him to stop the car and we jumped out. And he sort of turned around and left us there. We wandered down this quite quiet road, and on one side there was a pretty drab, grey, quite nondescript facility, but there was a high barbed wire fence. There are sort of these security cameras which sort of followed us as we walked past, trying not to look too suspicious. So we're actually now walking past the facility, which is
no photo sign.
Yeah, no photograph sign. Lots of corrugated iron, quite nondescript area.
Lots of CCTV pointing at us, yeah, slightly alarmingly.
And as we were walking along, we eventually saw this large white dome, which was poking out from between the trees. And this is a radar dome or a radome, which inside is a big satellite that listens out, eavesdropping on satellite traffic and sort of plucks communications from the sky and starts processing and listening to them.
So you're on the perimeter of a spy facility and you've been able to just walk in, nobody stopped you. That's pretty minimal security.
Yeah, we were just wandering along and we were, you know, pretty close to the perimeter of this facility, very close proximity to this to the radome, and there was no one around, or at least we thought. Don't appear to be being followed. This is a good sign.
It's really positive.
We were then apprehended by a group of cows who were quite interested in what we were doing. Oh wow, that's a big cow.
There's a really big cow. It's actually three
of them coming. Is it a bull?
This is terrifying. Are they taps?
Maybe the cows are actually intelligence agents.
I actually think they might be. Yeah. This is really weird the way he's looking at us.
Yeah.
And so why is this Danish spy facility, in all the possible places it could be, on the edge of an island?
The base has been there for decades, but over time it's become more important to Danish intelligence. So originally it was there to listen out for overhead communications from satellites and radio traffic. But in more recent times, what's been more important for the facility is its proximity to a landing point of a very important fiber optic cable, which carries a large amount of telecoms and internet traffic through it.
From where?
Well, from all over. There's a large amount of traffic which is believed to come from Russia and Asia.
Mm.
One of the points at which Russian internet traffic moves into Europe. There are only a handful of those points, and one of them is in Denmark.
Interesting. So this fiber optic cable potentially carries a lot of very sensitive and important information.
Yeah, a whole load of a kind of fire hose of very raw data, raw communications data, which is of great interest to intelligence services.
So, Harry, you don't have to be an intelligence professional to understand the value of a cable like that. And in fact, in the 1990s, this cable caught the attention of the US government. And Bill Clinton, then the US president, flew to Copenhagen for an important meeting.
Yeah, so in the 1990s, the Americans realized that there was this cable here and that it was potentially a kind of gold mine for communications data that was coming from China and Russia. And so it struck a deal with Denmark. It agreed that it would pay for a load of equipment and systems to help tap the cable and collect the telecoms and internet traffic from that cable. So we think that the agreement was made in the 1990s. And then by 1997, Bill Clinton flew to Copenhagen, and it's thought that this trip that he made, this very high-profile trip that he made to Denmark, was to say thank you for agreeing to become this partner to the U.S. intelligence services.
President Clinton arrived in Denmark still limping from the knee injury which had forced him to cancel a trip here in March. This was the first ever visit to Denmark by a serving U.S. president. And as an Air Force helicopter brought him to Queen Margarita's summer palace on Friday, it was clear he was getting the full royal treatment. She greeted him with a military guard and a 21-cannon salute.
So this deal is very interesting, and it was very secret. So how do we know about it? Well, it's a story you probably know as well. In 2013, a contractor with the US National Security Agency called Edward Snowden leaves a facility carrying millions of government secrets. It's the biggest intelligence leak in history, and it includes revelations like the US is collecting everybody in the world's internet traffic, it's spying on EU leaders, including Angela Merkel, that major telephone companies and tech firms are handing call records to the government without letting the public know.
I think that the public is owed an explanation of the motivations behind the people who make these disclosures that are outside of the democratic model. When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy.
And buried somewhere in the revelations is a glimpse at a deal that the US appears to have struck with Denmark. Just a glimpse. And unsurprisingly, it makes big news in Denmark and catches the eye of one person in particular, a Danish spy back at the farm, a young star hacker who does not like what he's reading.
He seems to have been already quite suspicious of the Danish intelligence services' relationship with the NSA, and this story and the sort of Snowden stories in general seem to add to his concerns. His concern is that the NSA might be or is potentially misusing this arrangement and is illegally collecting information on Danish citizens, and that he seems to believe that the spy service he works for is doing the NSA's bidding. Or that the NSA might have a backdoor into the cable tapping program they're running, and that they're accessing Danish citizens' data.
Interesting. So they're not just spying on data from Russia or from American adversaries. He thinks potentially they're spying on Danes as well.
Which they're not meant to. Part of the agreement is that they're not meant to be doing that. But that's his concern. And the Snowden story only adds to that concern, it seems. But he takes those concerns to his managers, and they then let him be part of an investigation, a highly sensitive internal investigation, which looks into this question of whether the US is abusing this cable tapping arrangement. This is an exceptionally sensitive inquiry that they conduct, which only a few people know about, and it's given a code name, and so it's called Operation Dunhammer.
They're investigating themselves.
Well, they're not just investigating themselves, they're investigating the US. They're investigating their most significant foreign partner. And so if the Americans found out about this, that would be, I think, pretty problematic. So they conduct this investigation in close secrecy, and only a few people know about it. But then what happens is that this inquiry puts together a report, and it goes to the senior management of the intelligence service. And ultimately, they feel that there is no smoking gun. Now, they do find that the US has been using the access that it has to the fiber optic cable to spy on European politicians.
So a lot of the Americans spying on European leaders that we learned about from Edward Snowden, this cable played a crucial role.
Yes.
And so what happens to the investigation?
So he's told by his managers to stop this investigation and go back to work.
And does he?
No. He, rather than drop this internal inquiry, he effectively expands it. But he's doing this now under his own steam. And he takes the extraordinary step to start recording his conversations and meetings with his colleagues at the intelligence facility.
He starts secretly recording the conversations he's having.
Yeah, he starts spying on his colleagues within this spy facility.
He's a spy spying on spies?
Yes.
Okay.
And not just is he spying on spies, he's spying on and secretly recording his, you know, his most senior colleagues, the spy masters that run the organization.
Who are those senior colleagues that he's spying on?
They include Lars Finsen, who is the head of the intelligence service.
The one who we heard from at the top of the episode.
Yes. This seems to go on for some time, and that in the end he collects what is believed to be around about 100 hours of audio.
Incredible.
And on tape, in these recordings, conversations, we think, about the NSA cable tapping partnership, which is, as you know, which as we've heard, is one of Denmark's most sensitive secrets.
So Danish intelligence wants this investigation, Operation Dunhammer, put to bed, and it isn't. The star hacker continues it on his own, and eventually a government oversight body catches wind that something unusual might be happening and begins its own investigation that produces a landmark report. Tell me about that report and what it finds.
In a pretty carefully worded statement, and a pretty brief statement, it was around about 4 pages long, it listed a series of pretty incendiary allegations against the intelligence service. And one of them related, not explicitly, but the people I've spoken to said this was what they were talking about, was that they were talking about the way in which there was a risk that Danish citizens' data was being accessed or collected by a core function of the intelligence service. And they didn't name it. They didn't say this is the NSA cable tapping agreement, but that's what it was.
So, I mean, they appear to be hinting that the suspicions of the hacker who got this investigation started 5 years before, that he may have been right.
Yeah, this panel that's there to oversee the intelligence services, led by a senior judge, they seem to agree with the concerns of the whistleblower. And they published this summary online. And as one former spy at that service said, then all hell broke loose.
All hell broke loose?
Yes.
What did it mean?
The government then placed on leave the head of the intelligence service, Lars Finsen, and several other of his colleagues at the service, and they were sent home. This is what the Danish press described as a sort of historic scandal. There were concerns that the intelligence service had been operating illegally, without sufficient oversight, and the line that was used that was one of the concerns was that it may have been operating as a state within a state. And this was front page news. It was a big story, and the story was that, you know, that the spy chiefs seemed to have been allowing illegal surveillance potentially of Danish citizens.
So what is the reaction within the government to the fact that these senior intelligence officers have effectively been told, go home, you don't have a job anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that decision was pretty controversial. It really upset people within the intelligence community. It upset people that they had sort of been hung out to dry when this was an arrangement which actually politicians knew about. You know, this wasn't a secret to the Prime Minister or to the Defence Minister who oversees the intelligence service.
One of those people is a very senior Danish politician. In fact, he's Denmark's former defense minister, a man named Claus Hjort Frederiksen. And he's really unhappy with the way these senior officials have been treated by the government. What does he do about it?
He starts speaking out publicly. He's a sort of towering figure in Danish politics. He's a big deal. So then what happens is he goes and does a series of interviews, including one live television, where he effectively provides the first, or what's interpreted as the first, on the record confirmation of this secret arrangement.
Når vi taler om de her ting, så har vi jo meget, meget stor nytte af at være allieret med NSA. Altså, der er jo noget i efterretningsverdenen.
And that has very serious consequences. Like Lars Finsen, he's charged with disclosing classified information, which under the law he's charged with amounts to treason.
And so now, it's not just the former intelligence chief facing treason charges, it's the former defence minister of Denmark, also in deep legal trouble, for the way he's spoken about this case.
Right.
Harry, you actually sat down with Claus Hjort Frederiksen in his house in Denmark to talk to him about this story. This was actually an exclusive interview for international media. Tell me about that meeting.
Yeah, so this summer, Lucy, our audio producer, and I, we went to see him, so we caught the train from Copenhagen. It was a pretty grey, muggy June day, and Klaus collected us from the train station in his 4x4.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
And you?
I'm all right.
And drove us to his home, which is this lovely, pretty charming thatched fisherman's cottage, which overlooks the sea. Yeah, so we sort of potted around with his two lovely dogs for a bit.
So is this what you do in the morning? Is this you come out and walk the dogs?
Yeah, so we take a small walk. And then but now we have changed it. The big walk we take with the dogs is now in the morning, because the past month it's been so hot here.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
A big contrast to your days as a minister.
Yeah. Now I'm a pensioner, but I'm not spending my time as I wanted to as a pensioner because of this criminal case that is against me. So I had thought that I could have a more peaceful life than I actually have now.
Because it's your having to prepare your defense. And
it's a lot.
I mean, being by the water, strolling by the water with Maxi and Frida, does it help you clear your head?
Yeah. It's very relaxing going here. Life is quite simple here.
not simple enough.
No.
And this is where he's currently spending his time waiting and preparing for his trial, which begins this autumn.
So, Claus Hjort Frederiksen, like Lars Finsen, is not allowed to talk about the specifics of these charges because they're still active proceedings. But what did he tell you about why he had decided to go public in this case?
He told us that one of the reasons why he decided to speak out back then was, I think he felt a sense of loyalty or obligation towards these people that used to work for him. He had a sense of loyalty towards them.
I was not a minister at that time. It was the Social Democratic government. And I found this very, very unjust procedure, sending these people home. I knew them as very loyal employees, dedicated employees, honest and hardworking people. And when you send people home, you sort of put a label in their face that they have done something very, very wrong and could not keep their jobs. And it my conscience would forbid me just to let it pass. Therefore, I started my criticism of the government's actions there.
And so what did he tell you about the day that he learned that, in fact, he was being investigated?
So he arrived home one morning and these officers were there waiting for him. He got out of the car and initially they were standing outside the house, outside this thatched cottage by the sort of roses. And this was sort of all happening in a quite public place, on his doorstep. So he took the officers inside and, you know, they told him about these charges, and he realized at that point that he was going to be prosecuted for some quite serious crimes, and he spoke about the way in which that was, you know, a great shock to him.
When the policemen arrived and they came here, were you shocked? Was this a surprise?
Yeah, you can say it's a shock being sort of honest man all your life, and suddenly you're charged with a very, very serious crime. Of course, it sweeps your legs away under you.
Were you ever arrested?
No. Then some weeks later, I went to a police station for interrogation, and it took an hour or an hour and a half.
And what was that like? You had been a minister at the very top of the Danish government for many years, and now you were in a police station being interviewed by two policemen. What was that like?
It is a shocking experience. I was asked, would you do this again? And I said, I bet you I'll do it again anytime, because I'm not looking at this without reacting.
Coming up, what next for Lars Finsen and for Claus Hjort Frederiksen?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So, Harry, the trials of these two men are now imminent. They're both strenuously denying all the allegations against them. But what exactly are they charged with?
So they've been charged for disclosing classified information under this quite unusual, rarely used section of the Danish Criminal Code. So, and this part of the Danish Criminal Code hasn't been used for more than 40 years. When it was used in a Cold War era case against an East German Stasi agent in Denmark, so it's sort of been brought back to life, and its use has been revived.
And that's something you spoke to Lars Finsen about when you met him.
The reason why they have used this part is that it has a potential, you know, frame for a sentence going up to actually 12 years. And this is using this part of the criminal code, it makes it possible for them to actually to deploy these very extensive surveillance measures. So I think that was the part of the, you know, of the scheme actually.
And the part of this part of the penal code is am I right in thinking it's about treason?
It's about treason, yes, certainly. Which is also a bit of an awkward situation when you have been working 30 years for government, being directors of two intelligence services, and then, you know, I find it hard to associate myself with this expression, but that's in fact what we are talking about.
Harry, you put this question of why are these men being prosecuted to the men themselves. So what did Lars Finsen and Claus Hjort Frederiksen say about why they thought they're being pursued?
I think they both feel that there is some form of political element in this, in that in order to bug the head of an intelligence service to charge such a senior former minister, that required a degree of kind of political involvement and sign-off, and that had to be, those decisions had to be agreed and green-lit at the highest levels of government.
So these two men are facing pretty extraordinary treason charges, and the trials for both of them are coming up really quickly. What do we know about those trials?
The trials are due to be held in secret. Prosecution want the trials to be held behind closed doors because the underlying charges, we believe, relate to, you know, this very sensitive national security secret. So all of the evidence that will be used against these two men in these two separate trials will be secret. We won't know what that is.
Harry, this is an extraordinary spy scandal you've been telling us about. From everything we've heard, these two men, two of the most senior security figures in Denmark's recent history, this was about telling the truth, standing up for their colleagues and saying in public what they thought was already known, what was already in the media. And now they're being tried over it for treason. That's their perspective. What do you think this is all about for the Danish government?
I think it's about the way governments control their secrets. And I think this is a tussle about who controls those secrets, who has the right to speak about them, and a sense of paranoia, which is perhaps not unique to the Danish government, about national security secrets. And for Western intelligence services, the Snowden leaks were such a painful moment in which they saw the ease with which their most sensitive secrets could find their way into the public domain. The Danish government had this secret which only a relatively small group of people knew about, this highly sort of sensitive piece of information, this document kept in a safe, which was considered to be an extremely important part of Denmark's foreign policy, if you like. It's a crown jewel in its strategic sort of security position, and nobody really knew about it for a very long time. And this story seems to be about the way in which this particular government in Denmark has decided that it wants to crack down on leaks and prevent information about its sensitive national security secrets from spilling out into the open. And what people I've spoken to have said is that this has had a sort of pretty chilling effect upon Danish press and their sources within the state, who see the prosecutions of Lars Finsen and Claus Hjort Frederiksen, and that's pretty frightening to them.
I mean, that they're making an example of these two men.
Yeah, that they are making an example of these men, and that if you're a civil servant or a mid-level junior intelligence officer, and you see something that you don't like, you decide that you want to share information with a journalist because you're worried about the way the government is operating, then that becomes a much more dangerous proposition. Mm-hmm. If this law, this section of the criminal code has been revived and is being used to prosecute some of the most senior officials and politicians in the country.
And so that this era where Danish secrets are splashed on the front page of newspapers, where whistleblowers inside intelligence agencies spy on their bosses, where former senior officials go on TV to discuss some of Denmark's most sensitive secrets, this era must come to an end.
Yeah, I think the government seemed to have kind of decided that that's enough, that there had been too many stories in the press that were based on leaks that had emerged from the intelligence services, and that they decided that they needed to prosecute and perhaps even make an example of some of the individuals behind or allegedly behind those leaks.
And so, Harry, that's the story of Lars Finsen and Claus Hjort Frederiksen so far. But that cable running along Denmark's coast, the one that you got so close to at the farm, that's still transmitting information. Is the US still spying on it?
As far as we know, yes. I mean, there's no indication that this arrangement has ended. And that really is the reality of modern global surveillance today. It's the inception of the sort of vast amounts of data which are, you know, coursing through these fiber optic cables around the world, our data running through them. And the prosecution of Lars Finsen and Klaus Hjort Fredriksen, that will change nothing.
Harry, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was Harry Davies, an investigative reporter with The Guardian. His story about this scandal is at theguardian.com. Regarding the feeling from the two men that the prosecutions could be politically motivated, Denmark's Justice Minister Peter Hummelgaard said in a statement, "I'd like to emphasise that neither the Prime Minister, myself, the former Minister for Justice, nor any other minister in the government has approved investigative steps taken in the cases against Fredriksen and Finsen." And that is it for today. This episode was produced by Lucy Hoff. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer was Phil Maynard. And we'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.